favorite Alex Jones moment of all time.
Man. I think so, it seems like there's at least a couple that
you can top three comes if you mind. Want. Yeah.
Okay. For me, the first time he confessed to murder on air.
That one was good.
Yeah. Like, what?
I just came at the weirdest possible time. Yes, you came at a great time because we're about to interview Knowledge Fight to learn everything about Alex Jones. Apparently, it is a very popular podcast. Everyone seems to love them, and they know an inordinate amount about Alex Jones, as someone, I guess, should, because the stories have to be told. Can you hear me? Did I?
Yes.
Yes. Awesome. All right. Yes. I did it. I did it.
Can you hear us?
I can hear both of you, everybody. Chat. Okay. Welcome our fantastic guests. And can all of you let us know how are their sound levels? How are they coming in? They look gorgeous and beautiful on the screen right now. Do both of you want to give a quick introduction to yourselves? And what exactly is the Knowledge Fight?
Yeah, sure. I'm Dan. And
I'm Jordan.
We do a podcast. No one asked us to do it, and it's dumb, and people shouldn't listen to it, but it's about Alex Jones, and we've done about 620 episodes about it.
That no one asked for. No one asked for it. People didn't ask for episode number one. They sure as hell didn't get to 500, and we're like, yeah, we're not done yet. No.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's a mess, but we keep learning new things, and so we keep exploring.
Okay, you know? Just a little bit of origin story to start out with before you have my mind blown multiple times. What was the first thing that drew you to Alex Jones? Was it the public access show? I imagine if you've been doing that many episodes, you had to be that far back in canon.
We're aware of that in this canon. So a lot of that stuff, in its entirety, is really hard to get a hold of now. So in terms of what we can cover consistently, it's usually back to about 2003 in terms of his episodes. But I've kind of had a slight fascination with him since, you know, a little bit after my college years, probably. Yeah, just seeing this dumb weirdo yelling. But in an entertaining way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And for me, the original conceit of the show was that I had never heard any Alex Jones content whatsoever. So
really?
Yeah, yeah. So the first episode is Dan explaining Alex Jones to me. And Then we did a few hundred more, and I know some things.
He doesn't have good retention, though.
I don't have good memory, so it makes things easier, yeah.
Okay, so just for my own timeline, where was Alex Jones in the world when you guys were starting this out compared to where he is now?
2017 was right when we started. We started in January 2017. And so he was riding high on the hog because Trump had just won the 2016 election, and Alex felt like he had a spiritual connection with him at the inauguration. He was doing great. Mm-hmm. He was having a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was probably white people's best moment for a good while. That was really what he was celebrating, you know.
He was basically like, see where he is now. It's the reverse of that.
Yeah,
he was
yeah.
Very happy.
So that's around where you start following him. So at that time, you're right. Alex Jones was kind of at the height of his career. He was. Did you feel at that time that he was going to go in the direction of QAnon like most other people, or did you think that he was going to kind of try and become mainstream? InfoWars was now going to be part of the press circuit. It's going to have a seat at the White House.
I think he tried both.
Yeah, sometimes,
ironically, he tried both using Jerome Corsi.
Exactly. Yes. In the same way, Jerome Corsi was supposed to be in the White House press corps, and then he became the QAnon guy.
He was trying to write a book about Q.
Yeah.
And sort of infiltrate that audience. But yeah, I thought for sure one of them would be something he'd try a little harder at. But neither worked, and he seemed to just be resentful of Like he kind of
half-assed trying both things and failed and then quit because it was hard.
And then got mad at everybody who's interviewed.
Yeah, it's their fault that he failed.
Yeah.
I just have to ask this because around the time when both of you start becoming fascinated enough by Alex Jones to turn it into your career, had you already seen some of the more egregious stuff that he had done in the past? Like, did it worry you that you were going to start talking about a guy who had involved himself with the Sandy Hook families and all that kind of stuff? Because that happens obviously before your podcast starts.
Yeah, I just would like to make a point that at the beginning we did not decide to make this our career. Uh-uh. That was very much an accident.
Thoroughly, everybody else decided that this was going to be our career. Yeah. I promise you that.
The first few years it was me and Jordan just being like, "Well, no one's listening." That's about right.
I think we've done more to actively hurt our chances of this being our career than anyone.
But yeah, I definitely was aware of the Sandy Hook business and, you know, a number of his other escapades, 9/11 truth in particular. Mm-hmm. I had some ideas about him being like involved with some of the Jade Helm paranoia and the Boston bombing. But a lot of that, I didn't have like a precise understanding of what he did. And I think through doing the show, you see the actually in context things that he says. And mm-hmm. they're so much worse than the presentation that you get from like little clips on Twitter.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. Like, I don't think a lot of people know just how, say, transphobic he is, for example, because they've only ever they've only ever heard like one or two things or seen a segment, and then I'll be like, have you actually watched the full InfoWars start to finish? Like, he goes on rants more so than most mainstream people.
Yeah, I'm convinced that most people who have like sort of a middle of the road view of Alex, or they think he's funny, or even people who are like, he's been right about so much stuff. I just think they have never really actually watched his show. Because mm-hmm. I think if you do, you can't come away with any other impression than he's a gigantic bigot mm-hmm. and he's wrong all the time.
Yeah. Okay, well.
About everything.
Yeah. I don't want to do spoiler warnings because I want to get to that near maybe the later half of this. Because that's the newer stuff right now, just seeing him being a band figure on YouTube and doing every YouTube show, it seems, in the conservative circuit. So that's fun. But, okay, let's lead up to that because there's a lot I want to learn from you two, specifically because you are, I think you may be the foremost experts on Alex Jones as far as anyone has told me in my audience. You have a lot of fans. By the way, in my tons of people are like, Lance, you have to talk to Knowledge Fight. They know so much about Alex Jones. It's their lives. All they
tons
do is
of report. Tons of people. How dare you? Our show is evidence based. I want numbers, sir. I want you to back this up.
At least four people in my chat, and then that's tons. I don't get. Like people en masse saying you have to go get these podcasters on your show, and it's not a coordinated effort. It's not like led by the two of you, which maybe it was. I don't know. maybe you're two of the four. I can't figure that out.
I think that if we were going to try and pull something like that, it would be more than four. I think we would maybe go for five.
Yeah. Selling us short, sir. Thank you very much.
But then,
so sad to hear someone tell me that we're the world's most foremost expert on Alex Jones.
Yeah.
It just bums me out.
Especially since I'm really not that good. So it's just him. I don't have to carry any of this weight, honestly. My brain doesn't work that well.
Okay, well let's do our best. Why don't we catch everyone up to what has led to where Alex Jones finds himself right now? I'm sure I've told this ad nauseum about the Sandy Hook events, about him lying that the children were crisis actors that ultimately led to harassment, which led to unfortunately one of the Sandy Hook parents killing themselves, and then the lawsuit that happens afterwards. How does that combine with the Trump era and Alex Jones finding himself in January 6th? Because I think that's a bit of a long story, but I want Cole's notes to connect those dots.
I'm not sure if any of the dots necessarily connect. I mean, everything that he did in terms of Sandy Hook coverage is just business as usual for him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not really... as awful as his behavior was, it's not really out of the norm.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
just before Sandy Hook happened, the Aurora shooting, the Batman movie theater shooting had happened. Mm-hmm. And he was doing the same thing. He was saying that some of the survivors were actors and, you know, questioning whether or not it had happened. And if it did, then James Holmes was probably mind controlled and all of this this stuff. So like,
none of that is ever he's never going to be held for lying about any of that. Like, it's not slander. It's not libel. If it's in written or said out loud, like how does that work?
I wish I knew.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I mean, I think one thing that's important to remember with Alex is what he's getting caught for is not something that he did for the first time that time.
Right.
Or even stopped doing. This is just how he's always treated any of these events. And Sandy Hook was just the one that he got caught on for any number of reasons. Not caught, but you know what I mean?
I think it was probably one of the most like traumatic
it was.
Of the incidents
yes.
that he's
Yeah.
Well, it was that.
I'm not gonna,
It was that and Pizzagate, basically, right? Like, Pizzagate is the other thing that he actually got in trouble quite a bit for, because he was one of the key proponents, him and Mike Serenovich.
Yeah, but he issued a big apology to James Alefantis after he was threatened with a lawsuit. So
yeah, he could get away with an apology on that
okay.
one.
He walked
okay.
that one back.
Yeah. Right.
Which is kind of the thing. This is we're seeing him being held accountable for actions that he's always done.
Okay.
And usually he can get away with it with an apology like he did with Hamdi Ulikaya.
From Chobani.
But
okay, well,
Alex,
why don't
in terms of Pizzagate, I think it was more like Rambo Joe Biggs, now of the Proud Boys.
Right.
I think he was doing some of the more active promoting of it. Alex might have been kind of vague, but still way off base.
Alex did say, hey, check it out.
You guys,
yeah, you
got to look into this.
we're just asking questions, right? We're just asking questions.
legally actionable about going, come on, you got
to. No. It's you know, Fox News has been doing it forever. Maybe I should have worded that different. Maybe I do want to separate the fact that he is in all these kind of troubles and litigations, but I did feel like that was kind of playing out at the same time. Like, we were seeing this video footage of Alex Jones' depositions. Alex Jones coming out and saying for the first time, I'm a character. This is an act, right? That was combining with him having legal troubles with his ex-wife and their kids and all of that, while at the same time he was, under Trump, I feel, having a lot more kind of like radicalized rhetoric, especially around the time that Trump was lying about the election being stolen. That's when it was full on, like, we have to take our country back kind of stuff, right? So is it important to parse those out, or do they overlap in a way that it tells the full Alex Jones story?
Is it important to parse those out is an interesting question to ask people who've done 600 episodes on the is it important to parse it out? The question you're asking is, should we exist?
We're in the hair splitting.
I apologize. I apologize. You know, I'm already quite fond of you both, so don't stop parsing.
I'm sorry. I kind of was lost in thought a little bit during the question.
You saying they're not connected? All right, his legal battles aren't connected with his like rise to this insurrection incident, which I want to separate and talk about on its own, right? But they were playing into our understanding as viewers of the Alex Jones experience. Here is a guy who is coming out and saying, I am actually an act. I'm not real, right? Like, I'm, first off, very, very curious what you think about that. Where does the reality end and the show begin with him, you know?
It's kind of, that comment is kind of a sticky area, because it was actually his lawyer who said that Alex plays a character.
Okay.
In order to try and get his show not to be allowed in custody hearings that he was having over with his ex-wife. And he will say that what the guy was, the lawyer meant was that when Alex does, like, he puts on Joker makeup and pretends to like fluoride in the water or whatever, that's him doing a character. And those may have been the videos that she wanted to play in court. So there, I feel like it's not a gotcha moment as much as we would like it to be of him being
okay.
I'm a character.
What's right. important about him, and I think the answer more to your question of parsing things out is a kind of exemplified by that example. You know, for the public consciousness, the idea is Alex came out and said, look, I'm acting like a character. Mm-hmm. In his world and in the world that we run around in, Alex didn't say anything like that. Alex's lawyer was so smart. He worked the system into getting away with something. He's
right.
always getting away with this.
Right.
There's always a technicality to where what you said he did isn't what he did, you know? And so that's why we have to parse it out so distinctly.
Mm-hmm.
It's a distinction that almost has no bearing on the real world.
Right.
But it matters right. for us for some reason.
Because it must.
I love how this is both like a curse for you and like a point of extreme fixation. It's amazing. Okay. But it must ultimately matter to, say, families who successfully sued him because he wasn't able to squirm out of it that one time, right? Mm-hmm. Or I'm guessing you both watched his deposition tapes, which were honestly very cathartic for me to watch him visibly be upset in a room with a professional grilling him on his many lies.
Yeah, that was pretty fun.
Those were good.
I think he was more confused than upset.
I legitimately don't know how to answer these questions. Yeah. Use words. Is this France?
Did I say those things? No idea.
My plausible deniability is I say a lot of shit, man.
It's quite high.
Yeah.
One of the advantages of having a 3-hour-a-day show that you just talk completely off the top of your head about whatever you feel like talking about is that, like, you can just say that anything is taken out of context.
Yeah.
So it's really hard to nail him down. There's a lot of that during the depositions, but yeah, there were a lot of great moments of like, ahaha, you can't just ignore this question.
Yeah.
How did you see Alex Jones and his style of reporting evolve over Trump up to the insurrection?
Ooh, the evolve is an interesting word to use. I would say more
I'm front
like,
loading. I'm leading the witness.
I would say more like it has been a not slow, but inexorable deterioration of a man's mind over time.
But it's also like a roller coaster too. Because sometimes the deterioration is like, he's coming back.
Right.
Makes sense.
It's like somebody with syphilis. You know, their brain starts to melt over time. But sometimes they're very, very lucid. Looks like they're normal today.
Yeah, there's just been a, and this isn't to say that he was ever like really awesome or anything, but mm-hmm. his ability to do his own
or
show
that he had syphilis.
His ability to even like kind of make the points that he wants to make has certainly dropped in terms of like his consistency on it. And the shows now, like as somebody who's listened to like multiple eras of his show, especially since Trump is gone, there's just been like, I don't even know what he's talking about. Sometimes he'll just confess to murder on air. He's out there. I often will be sitting here and they'll be like, I guess this is a way to kill 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. He can go on like a 6-minute rant about how God is going to punish his enemies, and then at the end he's like, yeah, but he really doesn't do that, so maybe you should do it for me. No biggie.
I gotta ask, as two people who watch him frequently, like, Do you find him as entertaining as everyone else does? Is that like, because I always say this, he's one of the most horrible human beings with a platform, but wow, is he an entertainer? You know, just a gifted, like, to turn on a camera and rant about the things he does and the ways he does.
Here's my problem, all right?
Okay.
We have said that many times on our show, and yet hearing you say it makes me want to push back against you and tell you that he's not entertaining at all. He's an evil son of a bitch. He needs to be taken down.
Right?
That's what I want to say. And yet I can point to an episode we did like 2 weeks ago where I was like, God damn it, he's an entertainer.
He's
such
an entertainer.
I struggle with even the premise because, like, you know, there are moments when he, like, reviews The Matrix. Or he talks about what his interpretation of some book that is so off is. And that's very entertaining. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when he yells stuff about how he's going to eat his neighbors and stuff, that's
or their asses.
Fairly entertaining.
Yeah.
But the flip side of it is I'm listening to these like long blocks of absolutely not entertaining stuff that just, you know, no one experiences. So I kind of have a bias against him in that, like, I see too much to really think he's entertaining.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a, like, I'm going to get to this headline, but first my wife went to the grocery store and she saw a globalist one time, and then when she was at the grocery store, she bought eggs. Eggs are very good. I like eggs.
Oh, you know, it's banal for his full...
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
Well, like, I mean, think about it. Like, George Carlin's a great comedian, and you like watching him do his set.
Right.
Do you want to watch him do 4 hours?
Every day,
probably
no.
Probably not. No. There would be some lulls.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. He's got to take a break at least, you know?
It's hard to be on. Okay. Okay. I understand that much. So under Trump, then, you're saying that his evolution is more just kind of the slow descent into, like, utter bad shittery, but a lot of it does start to cross over into the real world. Like, even before... the January 6th event and before all these like rallies that were being held, I did start to see this this angry undercurrent where it was pouring out of the InfoWars screen and into rallies that were crossing over with other groups that I'm very frightened by, you know, like your Nick Fuentes's and stuff like that and Proud Boys and all this. So where does this overlap start going? Like does his involvement with the Proud Boys coincide with any of this too? I don't know how that starts.
A good bit of this, there's sort of different timelines for a lot of it.
Right.
He's been in with the Oath Keepers, for example, since they began.
Right.
Yeah.
Like he was hanging out with Stuart Rhodes before they even had a website for the Oath Keepers. Mm-hmm. And so like he's all about them and has been for a long time. It's periodic the ways that he used to hang out. I don't know, hang out with. But Gavin McGinnis would be on his show in the past, and so there is where some association with the Proud Boys came from. Then Nick Fuentes came into the picture a little bit later, I don't know. I mean,
to give you an idea of what Gavin McGinnis did on the show, he and Alex's son got together and made dick jokes for a while. Like that's the type of show that was happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then as it's kind of gone on, we've seen more of like a both. Sometimes he'll dip his toe in with the Proud Boys and really support them for a while and then not really talk about them, but go back to this person. And then, you know. Nothing's really stuck quite like the Oath Keepers and certain...
Because they love guns.
Yeah.
But is that it? Is that the centerpiece? Is the guns more so than anything? Or is there an element to him flirting with groups that are a little bit more dangerous, a little bit more alt, we'll say?
I think he's always flirted with groups that are fairly dangerous. I mean, he's been a militia-leaning dude for like his whole career.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
But like I think, you know, central things to him are basically... vociferous defense of gun rights and essentially a white Christian nationalist country is those are the kind of no discussion on those points.
Right. And to be
not
sure,
gonna waver.
To be sure, it will be a patriarchy. Let's just get that clear right away.
Yes, that as well. But then there's also kind of like the deep state anti-Semitic aspect of it as well, right? Doesn't that play a little bit into it? But you're saying that's not consistent. The only two consistents are those two you mentioned.
You know, I mean, his racism is, you know, I think it's not as targeted towards Jews as people would think from the massive anti-Semitism that underlies everything.
Yeah.
His personal racism isn't like directed towards them so much as it is. Anything that's not white male Christian is bad.
It's just more broad. He's very inclusive. Yeah, like inclusive when it comes to his racism.
It's everything.
Yeah, because I was trying to think of a way to answer that question. Like, is his racism a central thing? And
yeah,
I think yes, but it's also confusing.
You
know, like it's hard to nail down exactly what it is.
Yeah, because it's also capricious.
Yeah,
sometimes he's just like you know what, I'm not going to be racist towards this person. But you know, fine, okay.
And to loop back to your earlier question about like his over the Trump years getting involved with these groups and such, I don't think that was a function of him really necessarily going that direction. It was, everything got more normal, like like a lot of fucked up things got more normal. Yeah. And if you're somebody who's used to being on the fringe of stuff, and that's kind of your bread and butter, and the fringe starts to become a little bit normal, you kind of gotta see where you fit in other places. And I think that a little bit of that could explain some of his like hanging out with
For your Trump years question, I think it's just more like the culture at large went to him. He didn't come to us, you know. Mm-hmm. we weren't waiting for him to really break into the mainstream. Trump got elected and everybody went ape shit, and then all of a sudden Alex Jones looks more normal than fucking Q boy over here.
True.
I've never said Q boy before. I was about to go with Q-bert, and that's what fucked me up.
I didn't know if that was an inside joke, so I was like, I'll just let them have Q-boy.
It wasn't.
Q-boy for now. It is now.
Motherfucking Q-boy.
Okay, so when it comes to Jones then and the Trump era, can you start explaining why we start to see him at more events and more rallies? Because it seems to be at that point he's kind of leading the cart more so than following it, right? And I don't know how much of that is because he genuinely believes in these causes, because we are going to talk about Jan 6, obviously. But like, is how much of it is a grift? How much of it is to sell a couple more Brainforce subscriptions? Or how much of it is because he's legitimately looking for this revolution?
That's a tough question.
Yeah, that's pretty broad and it's hard to say. I think all of the above.
Yeah.
I think it's a grift and he's very sincere about the sort of world that he would like to see.
It's a little bit like what you're asking isn't, is it more a grift or is it more of this in the question? Like what it really is if you know, both of them are incredibly valuable. Mm-hmm. And we don't know quite when push comes to shove if he'll protect the grift over the whiteness or the whiteness over the grift, you know? So far, it seems like the grift is taking top spot, but whiteness is just as up there, you know?
Yeah, and Alex latched on real hard with the Trump campaign in a way that was public and much more aggressive than a lot of the other voices in, you know, what you'd call conservative media. A lot of them were a lot more cautious and this guy says stuff we don't like. He's rude.
Well, how many times did they have Roger Stone on? Like that alone, I was like, wow, not a lot of people are platforming Roger Stone anymore.
I mean, he hired Roger Stone.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Or paying him, I should say.
Yeah. Alex is the one who said, "Get me Roger Stone." I don't know if that's true, but Roger, I think, had a huge part in convincing him to swing into Trump's campaign. But yeah, he got in early, and I think he claimed some sort of ownership over Trump's political existence because of that. And he had Trump on his show, which was ridiculous. And I think that also solidified things. And this is the other thing. This is where a lot of some of the early presence at rallies and stuff came from was he would pay people to yell stuff on cameras.
Yeah.
If you could get on like a live news camera and yell Hillary for prison, Infowars.com, he would give you $1,000.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So
he was putting out bounties for people to be behind the Good Morning America window with fuck Bill Clinton hanging up there. Yeah.
Or if you could disrupt a rally that was being videotaped and yell Infowars.com, then it would trying to buy free press. And I think some of that did work in as much as it got people to give it a shot. see if you can get that sweet cash.
Yeah, there's some clips of people saying Bill Clinton is a rapist and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So,
Infowars.com.
Yeah. $1,000 well spent, my friend.
And he had attractive slogans like Hillary for prison. Mm-hmm. And like he branded that content, and you'd see more of those shirts and stuff around at rallies, and the synergy like really came together.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, part of why he was at more rallies is just because Trump held a lot more rallies. You know, there were more rallies going on. Rallies seemed like a thing everybody was doing at the time. And so Alex would show up.
And it was a so tappable audience.
Oh, it's goldmine.
As it's been shown by things like QAnon.
They're
it's
at
like,
a Trump rally. They'll buy any old shit.
They're ready to be sold something. Mm-hmm. And Alex could come in with his pills and shirts. And fun bumper stickers.
Do you feel bad because the globalists are killing everybody you know slowly? Well, have you tried zinc? We're talking.
Yeah, we just we went through his products the other day to find out he's selling turmeric for like 40 times market value. And I was like, well,
but it's good turmeric.
It's a good kind, brother.
Turmeric, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Come on, buddy. This is the shit.
It's four times market value.
Yeah.
I think it was more than four times. It was closer to magnitudes of like 10 times. But because
so it's like the Breaking Bad turmeric.
Well, yeah, because I was like, turmeric is something you can buy generically by the pound in stores, right? They're selling this extract for like, I think, $32 per little vial of it. And it's supposed to be like, it's called The Sun is Locked Within It. We'll get into the pills later. I'm sure you've got a lot of pill stories. I
think we each have our favorites.
Okay, wait, sorry. Can I derail for one second? Have you done a show where you tried them? Were you actually?
No.
Oh, okay, good. Okay.
First of all, I don't want to give him money, and second, I'm worried.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they like his products scare me. Like,
yeah.
He's taking them on air, and then he acts really fucked up, and I'm like, no, this is a bad ad for this product.
Yeah. He's like, oh man, this brain force just. I love my fucking.
Yeah.
And then he definitely crashed in a half hour. I gotta go to rebroadcast. I'm tired.
All right, fair enough. Okay, sorry. I just want to get distracted by this because you've done a really good lead up to this. January 6th, and this is something that is a bit of contention on the internet right now. What happened? How much did Alex Jones have involved in that? I've watched the multiple clips of him with the megaphone saying, "We're coming for you, creatures." But I have also seen the clips of him afterwards being like, "This whole thing was like a QAnon, Antifa, smoke show. We have to get out of here. Follow me." So at what point is Alex Jones leading them to the charge? How criminally involved do you think he is with this? Because he is now going to be pleading the fifth based on this whole event.
Yeah, that seems to be his intention.
Probably.
And I wish him the worst with that.
Yeah.
although it is his right, I guess. I don't know.
Yep.
I think the courts will determine his criminal liability. I think spiritually he had a lot to do with the lead up to it, even before the day of January 6th, in terms of promoting the rally, pushing the idea that the election was stolen, that there was something that could be done still about it. Those kinds of rhetorical or rhetoric threads that he had and pushed so severely, I think that there is some blame. But in terms of like actually him, being there and being like, being involved,
right,
I think
right,
it's
right.
less than most people would want.
I mean, because the answer isn't, what's Alex's criminal involvement in January 6th? That question really isn't,
Well, we're not lawyers. None of us are.
The whole overall thing, what happened on January 6th was the culmination of an entire right-wing media sphere working in conjunction with the president to create an alternate reality where the election didn't happen the way that it did.
Overlapping with the conspiracy theory cult that also had decentralized leaders who had indoctrinated thousands of people. Yeah, yeah. It's a very unique thing in human history.
Right. So, did Alex push people towards the Capitol? I don't think so.
Okay.
He did literally lead a march.
Well, I mean, no.
Yeah,
I understand that. But
that was going to be my follow-up. But I was like,
I understand what I'm saying. I get it. I mean, more like the criminal portion of it.
Right. Yeah.
If they had won, Alex would have taken credit for the whole thing.
Oh, of course.
He's the president now. He won. He defeated the world.
He's from Texas, where you can declare yourself king.
You just declare yourself king. Yeah. So they lost. So I would imagine that he's probably smart enough to have head in some, deniability somewhere.
Yeah.
I think, he led that parade, as it were, the march that went to the Capitol. But I also think that would have happened with or without him. I don't think that he had much to do with it except for being there, which maybe that's some kind of liability.
Or being an inciting,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, or being an inciting agent, whatever you can clarify that as, right, or define it as maybe for a while. Because, there's certainly a lot of rally footage of him straight up being like, they stole this from us, the commies in the office, and all that kind of stuff. But
I hate the word incite because you want to say insightful, and then it sounds like,
no, can't do that.
No.
True.
It's hard linguistically.
I would say as far as that rally and everything goes, the guys with zip tie handcuffs... Mm-hmm. We're going in that Capitol.
Yes.
That was going to happen.
Yes.
So did Alex lead thousands of people and add more people to that? Probably.
Mm-hmm. But he's not single-handedly responsible for it happening, and it would have happened without him. But he could, in theory, have made it worse. It's probably the most generous.
Yeah.
We could be. Do you think his last minute reversal was actually out of fear for what he was seeing, or was that part of protecting his brand and being on camera, now using this to say, I was actually trying to stop the insurrection, which is his new narrative?
Yeah, my suspicion of it is that he was really into it until shit got real. And then once shit got real, he knew, like, he would recognize, obviously, this is a threat to everything in his career. Like, okay, if they do kidnap senators or whatever, like, they are going to crack down so hard on the right wing. This is not going to right wing extremists.
Yeah.
Militia types and people who are very much associated with Alex. I think that he realized that was really bad for business, and probably did sincerely want things to calm down. So it wouldn't lead to that.
Yeah, I mean, his business is built on terrorist edging, not terrorism. You know, it's
that's so true.
People in this frenzied state of emotional
without any release,
without any critical thought, and then without any release. So you're just constantly buzzing, and then your only release is clicking a button to buy turmeric sometimes when you're supposed to call.
But it's good turmeric.
It's good.
It's got the power of the sun inside it.
Right.
Okay, so
it's exactly that. I'm sorry, I didn't mean.
No. Go ahead. Please interrupt at any time.
It's keeping you in this this anxious on edge state, the edge state or whatever, and then the only real solution that's offered is that, like, give me money or promote my show.
Yeah.
It really is almost that simple.
Mm-hmm. It's a good grift.
Yeah.
partial grift, partial truth. But now, post this, I know outside of the legal woes, which you can't really, you know, talk too much about because none of us are lawyers, I have seen online the new resurgence of Alex Jones, the Jonesance, whatever you want to call it, where he's almost become like Nicolas Cage, where he's self-aware so much of his own meme that he memes himself, right? And he is now kind of family, more palatable. I've seen him on, and these are already pretty bad figures, you know, the Joe Rogan show, Tim Pool show, doing those kind of circuits. He's popping up in the Geeks and Gamers circle now on Steven Crowder's, and then just doing this whole thing. But now he's popping up on, a leftist podcast.
Are those mainstream to you? Just real quick.
mainstream internet. Mainstream
so
internet.
Just,
oh, yeah.
You just listed a lot of white supremacists, so mainstream
in the sense, like, these are the largest. I mean, I got to be real here. Sure, Steven Crowder is the largest independent.
Like, they're already comfortable spots for white nationalists.
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. But, okay, fine. He was banned off YouTube, right? So I guess that doesn't count for anything because now he just enters into this new circuit. But I've noticed they all have this new meme, and that's meme is Alex Jones is right or was right. That's like, they're really pushing that. And I hear a lot of people who might not have been comfortable talking about Alex Jones outside of him being, you know, a fucking horrifying transphobe, say now he's funny. The whole thing's a meme. You have to understand, right? I don't know. What do you think of this current state of Alex Jones mania?
Well, in terms of, like, you know, the shows that you listed, those are all things that he was been on before.
True. Like, Red Scare podcast would be the next one that was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter. I admittedly don't know enough about that show to like really comment, but it did seem like a weird booking. I think he'll go wherever he thinks he can get some attention.
Yeah.
And good. I mean, that's what you would do if you're
if he can, that's a huge problem. If he can turn himself from, if he can add a revenue stream of being a joke, that's bad.
Well,
you know,
and the thing about those shows, that I think is really toxic and reinforces that he's right about these things is, like, really well encapsulated by, if you watch some of the Rogan episodes, they'll bring up something that is very complicated and then be like, oh no, this is Alex, your idea about this isn't true. And then Jamie will Google something and has a couple of the words that Alex used. And then, oh my God, what?
Can go on Google.
And the reality is often that the things that they're saying aren't true. There is the surface level appearance of Alex having been right, but in reality, he completely misrepresented something or just made something up out of whole cloth.
Yeah.
And that's not even counting all the things that he's been explicitly wrong about. We live in Chicago, and we should have been nuked a couple times by now.
He has said that Chicago will be nuked, at least three times over the past few years of our existence. Each time was nerve-wracking.
This is a dynamic that you don't really get to experience unless you listen to way too much of his show. But there is like a real sense of, you know, whatever his mood is how things are going to go.
Yeah.
And
so
whenever he's in a bad mood, like let's say he's lost a lawsuit or
everyone's
something.
Everyone's dead. Everyone's going to die.
We're about to die. Everything is about to go
run
down.
Run away, leave, go into the forest.
And then when he's excited about something, it's like, we got a 90% chance of beating the globalists.
we're up 40 to nothing in the fourth quarter. We just got to bring it home, guys.
It's meaningless. These predictions.
Yeah. I feel that it's a confirmation bias. Like, I don't know if the both of y'all saw his recent RV session with a whole bunch of alt-right celebrities were in there. Tim Pool was in there. One of the people who testified at the Rittenhouse trial was in there. Blair White was there. Alex Jones was there. Drew, yes. And they were all just having, you know, a little conversation, but they pulled up this meme. I think Jamie, of course, pulls it up, but it shows you the list of the Alex Jones was always right. And so the first ones are like the gay frogs, apparently, has been proven correct. So, I mean, I can get your feedback on that one. The second one is human organ hybrids in pigs or something being grown or something.
Okay. So the right, do you wanna... thing is that lacks nuance the
okay.
way he talks about it. And I don't care to get into it. But the animal hybrids and organs thing is like, okay, yeah, there are people doing research into ways to grow organs that could be replacements for people. There's a lot of people on transplant lists.
And the spiders and stuff.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's not really what he talks about. He talks about like wild chimeras. Like on one of our early episodes, he was talking about how he went to a lab in, was it somewhere in Texas, and he saw a tank full of fish with sad human eyes.
Human fish people chimeras.
With sad human eyes.
That's real, with sad human eyes.
Yeah, he talked about shit
they
like that.
They were bummed about being trapped in there.
Yeah. I think if you just talked about, there's some concerns about the way science is evolving. Like, great, we could have a conversation about that.
Yes.
Not what he actually talks about.
If you throw a lot of bullshit out, if you're just willing to say anything will happen in the future, then yes, in an infinite universe, eventually something that you said will happen will happen.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he was right about it. That doesn't mean he predicted it. He didn't know it was going to happen. He didn't think it was going to happen. And he doesn't care that it did happen. All that matters is that he said it.
No, yeah, like for the large portion of his career, the Midas Resources was a big sponsor of his show. The guy who ran it, Ted Anderson, who also owned the Genesis Communications Network. Mm-hmm. And so he was just a gold, like, he was hawking gold like crazy. And so one of his biggest things was to say that the financial collapse was right around the corner because it facilitated helping him make arguments for selling gold.
Gold's going to be going up during a financial collapse.
And if you do that for 5 years and then 2008, 2009 happens, you didn't predict it. That's not predicting it.
Mm-mm. No.
It's just trying to sell gold.
Yeah. You're just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
It does give power to him,
though. Alex did not predict anything. He just maybe threw it out there.
and hoped that some of it lands.
He is like, I'm just saying. That's his prediction.
Hey, come on.
But, like, in your advice, what do you think people can do to push back against this Alex Jones? Like,
go into the forest! Get out of here!
I don't agree with that. Sorry.
Well, I mean, you both professionally report on him, both for amusement and I'm sure to keep everything factual and inform people about how absolutely horrifying this human being is, right? Who does have a very large independent network that they've crafted themselves, propped up by all these other legitimate networks that keep having him on as a guest because he's funny now. He's a meme. So what is the, like, how does one push back against this, like, endless barrage of not only disinformation, but now the filtering to make it seem like he's actually correct?
I hate to say this, but I don't know if there is a really good way to do that. Originally, I thought...
Subscribe to Knowledge Fight, everyone.
What's that?
Oh, I said subscribe to Knowledge Fight, everyone. Right now, all of you. Go sub, go follow, go review. Positive 5 stars, no, iTunes, no. You name it.
I'm telling you right now, we preach only to the choir. We're not preaching anybody.
It's an echo chamber that serves no purpose.
Like, I think I'm going to disagree with these guys and then listens to our show and goes, well, I guess I was wrong about Alex Jones.
Yeah, Jordan yells a couple times and that weeds out anybody who might not be into the show. I'm not sure if there is like a really good way to push back on a lot of this stuff. I think that dealing with it realistically helps, and hopefully that's part of the project that we do, you know, trying to check up on some of these ideas. And then, you know, there's a 600 plus episode archive of times he's been full of shit. Mm-hmm. And like, I think that if someone were actually interested in figuring out, like, oh, is he right about stuff? That might be a good resource for them. And I think if people are in their day-to-day lives and dealing with people who are like that or who have those ideas, I think probably just not being mean to them, asking follow-up questions, mm-hmm. like, because most of the time things just don't even stand up to follow-up questions. I think that can help. That can penetrate things a little
bit. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, if you know what to say, you can make people frustrated and walk away from you, but you can't really convince them. You know, you can make it so people are like, oh, I'm never going to get that person, but it didn't go the way I wanted to, and then they walk away. Or you can just start a big fight and nobody will be happy. So
yeah, because it's worse than something that's going to be resolved by, that's a good point.
Yes.
But it's also not as severe as requiring like cult deprogramming. So it's somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's a really tough situation to know what to do. And even after doing the show for as long as I have, I don't think I know.
I have considered throwing, you know, those things that you can buy at a fireworks store, the snaps, you know, you throw them down. I'm just throwing this out there. I'm just asking questions. All right. Has anybody considered having one of those arguments and then just throwing snaps in their face the entire time to see if they would agree with you?
What about like when you put it in your finger and snap?
Ah, see, then you have that magic. They will believe in you because you have magical powers. They don't understand gunpowder.
Well, hey, speaking of magical powers, does he know about your show? Have you been contacted?
Look, I don't want to get into specifics, but yes, he absolutely knows about our show.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, but I don't know what the I don't know what he would think.
Yeah.
Let's say that.
I mean, his review of Oblivion would probably be better than his review of our show, but
yes.
I think the movie is probably worse than our show, so take that as you will.
His review of Oblivion was also very long.
Yes, it was. It was detailed, it was exhaustive, and it was a family show.
Yeah.
It was a family show.
I don't know. People I also ask, like, would you want to talk to him, to me a lot? And it's just, I can't think of maybe what something I want less.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine how miserable that would be.
I think people in their mind when they go, Dan, would you want to talk to Alex? I think they have this like conversation that's like heat, you know, between De Niro.
Yeah.
And where you guys just sit down, you're like, listen, we're on other sides of the law from each other, but I understand where you're coming from. You know, like that kind of thing. That's not how it would go.
No, it would be a lot of yelling from one side and me laughing.
Maybe struggling, maybe some choking.
Yeah. No, fair enough. I totally understand that. Do you both receive a fair amount of info warriors attacking you online for your careers?
It's what's crazy.
It is. That's what I'm saying. We only preach to the choir.
I don't know what the deal is, but there has been very little abusive messaging from InfoWars types. I don't know why. I don't know what the deal is. Maybe a couple. Like, we've been doing this for like 5 years, been a couple.
No, it's almost going to be six.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think I've gotten more angry messages from people who are fans of... We do some episodes about this YouTube show called Project Camelot that's about, like, space grifting weirdos. And I think I've gotten more angry emails from fans of that than from Alex, which is bizarre.
I think it's because people just get frustrated and walk away. If you want to if you want to argue with our show, you have to listen to a lot of it and then you have to read the shit that Dan cites, because that's the trick of InfoWars. He never cites anything. There's really nothing to really look into. And if you do, it doesn't really say what he says it does. So you'll think you just got the citation wrong. Whereas on our show, if you want to argue, you have to get in the weeds, man. Mm-hmm. I don't argue with us. I don't argue with anything that dude says. He knows what he's talking about.
I also just think that we're not fun people to engage with.
Like, oh, yeah, no.
Like, I think if you... If you look at the content that we put out, it's not angry. Like, we're not responding from a place of anger where people can sort of, like, be like, ha ha, are you triggered? Or whatever. It's I think that a lot of the, you know, a lot of the games that people who have these, you know, negative responses, they want a negative response from you. They want to play the back and forth game. And I think it's abundantly clear that
We're not interested.
Do you think everyone who enables him, like all the people I was listening who have him on his show, are they being useful idiots, or are they genuinely believing him when he does say, I've got the source? You know, I'll see him with the parchments of paper. He's like, oh, I've got the whole sources right here from the Pentagon. We've got every single document, right? I've had everything. It's listed. You can tell. But like, clearly, this is just empty pieces of paper, or it's just like, you know, Google Maps or something. Like, it's never what he's talking about.
You know, that's a question for the, I suppose, more about the people in his sphere, right? Like, a lot of those people are incapable of seeing beyond a surface level of research. So why wouldn't they believe that he has the documents if he can show, if you're willing to believe somebody because they show you that it said subsection BC2, then you believe him. And you're enabling him. If you're somebody who's capable of looking beyond that for a 1 second, then you are maliciously enabling him to hurt people, you know? So it's up to you.
And I think after Alex went on Rogan for episode 9/11, that was the first one that he was on, I think after that got so, like, huge, I think that people, whether they believe him or not, are willing to, like, oh my God, this is going to blow up.
Yeah.
We're going to get so much attention out of this. They would have him on no matter what.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like that Flagrant 2 podcast.
Yeah.
Had him on a couple times, got super drunk.
If you want,
took his shirt off.
If you want to have that spectacle episode where you've got Alex Jones doing ridiculous things, then he's there for you. You know? And he wouldn't even, I mean, I haven't listened to the Red Scare podcast that he did, but I'm guessing he didn't say any of the transphobic things that he normally says.
And money couldn't pay me to listen. Couldn't pay me.
Money.
I was like, damn, money pays you.
RV.
No, that's a prime spot to call a meteor upon.
I actually texted Jordan.
I sat through the whole thing.
That was going around on Twitter. I was like, I am never going to do. I'm never going to watch this RV video.
Fair enough. Can't. Don't do it. It's actually shockingly boring, to be honest. Outside of the fact that
no, that's not a shock to us.
Yeah,
that's what I would have expected. But annoyingly boring.
The only good thing is in the first 5 minutes, Tim Pool does start laughing and kind of gives away the grift. He's like, "People are just giving us money." Well, he's staring at the screen, and I was like, "Oh, you don't hear him say that out loud." But yeah, okay.
To answer your question succinctly, though, too. yes, they are enabling him.
Yeah.
That is for sure.
Okay, the two questions that were obviously flooded to me by these four people who wanted to know desperately when I brought you on, that I guess everyone is really concerned with. Number one, and I guess we'll start with this, what is your favorite InfoWars store product?
I think for me it's the what is it called? Alpha Brain or Super Brain or something. He has some new, like, stimulant type product.
Outside of Brain Force Plus?
it's more than that.
Yeah, more than Brain Force
Turbo or something. But he will talk about it, and his ad pitches end up being like, "You got to take like
don't
a
take
quarter
this.
Of this.
Seriously, you might die.
This will fuck you.
You
up.
Are going to be laid up for a week after you take this. Yeah. Don't take this. Anyways." $59.99 for a pack, buddy.
I love that. That's just so fun. Sounds like a drug dealer.
Yeah.
He is a like, drug dealer.
You're not ready for this. You're not ready for this. You're only going to want to take a half a bite of the edible. You think you're going to not get high, so you take another bite. Don't do it.
And then back in the day when he was pushing the Super Male Vitality real hard, the way he would try to dance around it being a boner pill kind of thing or a boner aid.
Yeah.
It was so funny to watch him try to like wink at the audience. But, like,
and then one time Rob Dew, was it Dew?
Yeah.
So he's talking to Rob Dew and he's like, "Hey, Rob, I heard your wife really liked this stuff." And Rob Dew just says something incredibly gross, like she's sore all the time or something like that. And you're like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" That is not how you sell products.
So I think those, I mean, obviously I've never taken any of them, but in terms of sales strategy, those are up there for me. What about you?
I mean, it's not a product sold in a store, but if he was selling commemorative hatchets from that time he threw hatchets at the camera on
a Christmas Eve?
On a Christmas Eve, yeah. That one I would definitely be, but that would be my favorite product. Hatchet. Sticking out of a camera.
Christmas Eve 2 years ago, he got drunk and threw hatchets around the studio on his show.
Yep.
And one, he was trying to, literally and explicitly, trying to hit his camera with a hatchet. It was amazing.
"Hey, I'm going to try and hit this camera." He said it. Yeah. He wasn't missed the camera.
How did the llamas get into the studio? I just saw the clips. I didn't see the origin story.
You know what? I forget.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
That's something I actually forget. I don't know why the llama was there. I remember it
fair
happening.
Enough. Yeah.
I mean, why did Johnny Carson have so many guys who can handle monkeys on The Tonight Show? You don't ask questions about when a llama shows up, you just laugh and enjoy yourself.
I think it might have just been a straight up publicity stunt.
I think so, too. I think he really just was like, "I don't know, let's get some llamas in
there."
There
might have been no higher purpose to it.
That's actually better. I want to believe that. I want to live in that world. That's better to me. Okay, this is
the
more
llama was uncooperative.
Yeah, I do remember that. This is a serious question. What do you both think, and if this is too legal, you don't have to answer it, was in the documents that he doesn't want to turn over to the courts revolving his finances?
I mean, the Occam's razor answer is just all the regular old illegal shit that people do, you know, like, but if you look at a shady right wing grift, any shady right wing grift, and you get their actual ledger, I don't think they want you to see that. It's not 100% on the up and up, you know,
probably not.
So it wouldn't even have to be some big conspiracy or anything. He's just like, "If they catch me on tax fraud, I'm going to go Wesley Snipes on people." Like, I don't know what's going to happen here.
Or even beyond tax fraud, there's, you know, possibilities of, you know, sources of money being embarrassing, like people he probably, like billionaires, like the Kochs or the Mercers or something. Obviously, I don't think that those are the case. But some kind of funding that would look weird to him, or even I would think that it's possible that the two possibilities: he's super rich and he doesn't want people to realize just how rich he is, or he's not that rich and he doesn't want people to know that. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of possibilities. It's kind of hard to know what the specifics are, but I.
Yeah, the thing is, there are so many reasons he could be.
Yeah.
You can, with Alex, you can really just kind of imagine any number of possible financial crimes or even just financial embarrassments, because he is both of them all the time.
Fair enough. One other question people want me to ask you is, have you watched any YouTube videos by prominent creators on Alex Jones, like H-Bomber Guy's video on Brain Force Plus, or any of the other big content creators' videos on Alex Jones? And if so, do you like them?
I have watched some. I a lot of it blurs together, and a lot of it also, a lot of the time, I try not to take in too much secondary content of his about him, just for the sake of not wanting to take on too much of other folks' interpretations or have it color my perspective. That's really pretentious. But I also get it.
I don't think it is.
Alex, just no, listening to it.
Yeah,
that's another.
But also, you sound like you want to be objective
about saying.
Yeah.
I don't want to listen to Alex all the time.
Yeah.
Which I already kind of do.
Exactly.
I'm taking a break to talk to you from listening to Alex.
While we talk about Alex.
Yeah. Life sucks.
Yeah, see, why did you guys choose to make this your career? Ask that question again.
Okay, well that leads me to the most frequently asked question. Favorite Alex Jones moment of all time?
Ooh, man. I think it seems like there's at least a couple that...
You can top three if you want. Yeah.
Okay, for me, the first time he confessed to murder on air.
That one was good.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what? Yeah. What are you doing?
Yeah, I murdered a guy. Wait, why did that come? That came out of nowhere.
Yeah. We covered an episode from, I don't know, was it 2013 or 2009? I can't remember. But it's when Captain Phillips got kidnapped by the Somali pirates.
Yes.
And Alex's take on it was, well, you got to give it to the Somali pirates.
What? Yes. He went on this long explanation for why what they were doing was wrong. But then he kind of got trapped in his own headspace. And he was like, well, it was effective, though. So in a certain sense, you got to give it up to the Somali pirates. They really know how to pirate shit. It's like a professional courtesy.
Yeah. Those are my favorite things. Those moments like that. And then to fill out the three, back in 2017, Alex did a special report where it was Roger Stone had just gotten in trouble with Adam Schiff. And so Alex got really drunk and talked to Roger for a little while. And then the show just kept going. And by the end of it, he is so wasted. And he's talking about jizzing on diamond covered skulls as
yeah, that's right. That
he's,
one.
He's trying to explain to Rob Dew how there are three ways to learn.
There's four ways to learn.
Well, turns out there's four.
Originally, there's supposed to be three.
Yeah.
That's how drunk he is.
And Rob Dew is sitting there with his coat on, like he wants to leave the studio. And it's just Alex is that guy at the end of the party who won't shut up.
I mean, there's a great honorary mention because it didn't happen on his show, but he's doing an interview with, what's that dude's name?
Patrick Bet David.
Patrick Bet David. He's doing an interview and Patrick is talking to him about the sad state of his life and career and all the horrible decisions he's made to get there. And eventually Alex just responds to something by just going like, takes a bite of an apple and life's very fragile.
Chewing an apple, it says life is very fragile. But it's worse than that. That's in response to Patrick Bet David telling him about how he has to be able to speak to motivate his employees, and he lost his voice, and it was terrifying for him. Oh, and then Alex just takes a bite of an apple, very fragile.
That's very fragile.
And then to give another great point from that interview, which I recommend everyone watch. That's on YouTube.
It's fantastic.
It's very fun.
Yeah.
At the end of it, Alex is wasted, and Patrick Bet David gives him a word association game where he names off people, and Alex has to say the first word that comes to his mind, and he's like Hillary Clinton, vampire. He just keeps saying vampire.
Vampire.
Vampire. And the last one is Trump, and he's like, the next level.
He's
going to lead us out. Like, oh, God. Oh, it was so good.
Funny.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That is really funny. I didn't know about that. Sorry, what do I look up? Patrick
Bet David. He's like a entrepreneur, kind of motivational guy. He has a YouTube channel. I'm not saying I recommend his channel, but that interview with Alex is bizarre.
Oh, this dude, I have seen him before.
Talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, I've seen him
before.
The one where
he yells about how he's ready to die. That was the big headline from it.
Oh, wow. I can't thank you enough for this interview. Both of you are absolutely fucking hilarious. I can see why this thing took off, this show, and why you were recommended to me by four people in the chat.
Four. One for each way to learn.
One of them's named Race Memory.
Well, thanks for having us. Yes. It's a real treat to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
I haven't been too blowhardy.
No, it was amazing. Like, honestly, Dan, Jordan, y'all are absolutely fantastic. Where can people find you and get their fix if this wasn't enough?
Well, Chicago's going to be nuked soon, so right. They can't find us.
Right. But our servers aren't
our
in Chicago.
Our servers are not in Chicago, so you can still go to knowledgefight.com.
It's in the cloud.
I think we're on Twitter. It's at knowledge_fight and at GoToBedJordan.
Yeah, those are basically, that'll take you where you need to
go. Yeah, from there, I suppose just hang out in random chats on Twitch shows and somebody might recommend us.
People have told us that the best episode to start with is, it's on our homepage now because people told us this enough times.
Yeah.
It's one where we learned that Ronald Reagan liked to get pegged, which was... a bizarre episode.
That one was interesting.
Yeah. Wait, can you spoiler alert? Is that a true thing or is that an Alex Jones statement? That
no, it's a someone.
Alex actually, wait, I don't want to ruin it. I don't want to ruin it. What am I doing? You're like, I'm going to pitch you the best episode, and I'm giving away the whole thing.
It's not Alex's idea.
No,
okay. Something that's brought to Alex and almost derails the show.
Yeah.
You can't spoil it. It's the seeing the explosion.
See how it plays out.
Yeah.
We don't tease things too often, but that's a moment that you want to experience, like the first time you had a Coke. You know.
Mm. Yeah. Understandable. Oh well, thanks again, Dan and Jordan. That was an absolute pleasure.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Bye. Everyone, that was Knowledge Fight, aka Dan and Jordan, podcasters extraordinaire. That was really fucking fun. XOTJ, I can't remember if you were one of the four people. I never got a chance to say on the Twitters. There were far more, by the way. There were more people popping up in that Twitter thread when I was talking about Alex Jones. They were like, you got to talk to Knowledge Fights, talk to Knowledge Fights. I should have been like, well, yeah, we'll all come together. But no, I do appreciate that. I keep meaning to listen, don't know where to start. Apparently, you gotta start with the Ronald Reagan Gets Pegged episode, you know? So you've just been listening to an episode of The Surf Times, and if you enjoy it and want to see The Surf Times, you can go to wearesurfs.com or watch the live shows at thesurfs.tv. And also, everywhere social media is sold, basically, thesurfs.tv, you'll find us there. twitter.com/thesurfstv, for example. It would also help us out tremendously if you could leave a good review of this podcast if you enjoyed it, either on, I don't know, iTunes or wherever you're podcasting. Apparently it does help, and yeah, we hope to see you soon.
To our gods, Xander Corvus and Peyton L. Joost, we will build a ladder to heaven to deliver you the daily news. To our monarch, Tom Spiker, we are your most humble of clownish jesters. To our lords, Trevor R. and Alexander Thaler, you have our undying fealty. To our Knights of the Round Table, Nate, that one guy, Hagbird Celine, Matthew Scarborough, Stellar Vision, Ariana McCarthy, Daniel Sutton, Ants Are Still Running the World, Coulter Smith, Tom Groh, Val 9000, Jenna Tal, Quiet 185, Anna Loves Riley, Riley and Anna, Omni, Poodle Hawk, The Tim Caucus, Multi Mondi, Trevor Janis, Lemmy 101, Anthropophojack, Saren 42, Chronic to Hemphog, Catherine, Radical Maniac, Ramon Acosta, Incosin, Violent Orchard, Sophie Bibby, Political Puppy, Andreas Chiringuito, Zach Christensen, Josh Mickelson, Todd Buckingham, and Todd Lajeunesse. We shall meet you in the tavern, and we raise a drink, and we salute you.